are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
This morning on this fine autumn day, I guess, not as good as yesterday, and the day after May 1st, which of course was May Day and a huge celebration worldwide in many countries. I just welcome you also on the generations of Unitarians who have worshipped in similar gatherings here in South Australia since 1854. We acknowledge that the land we meet on this morning is the land of the Kaurna people. They are the landowners from a long time ago. We recognise the Kaurna people are still alive, and we recognise their leaders past and present. The territory of the Kaurna Plains, on which Adelaide is situated, and extending beyond that as well, is exclusively Kaurna land. This is a radically inclusive spiritual community. We welcome everyone. So those folk who are new to this morning's service or have been here sometime in the past, welcome and welcome back. And also those regulars who are here, of course, you're welcome. It doesn't matter what God or God you believe in or don't or are not sure about. It doesn't matter how you gender identify. It doesn't matter what political leanings or affiliations you have. And it doesn't matter who you love or prefer to make love with. No matter who you are, you will find this is a community that supports you in finding, fashioning, and following your own spiritual path. Whatever path that helps you to see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all people. As is the custom in most Unitarian gatherings, our candle is lit as a symbol of the light that connects us all. Let it be a focus for our time together this morning as we seek to find answers to those questions that will assist us on our spiritual journey. To start with, I'd like to read to you this poem. It's by Dwana Makoba, who is a Unitarian minister in the United States. I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live so that which came to me as a seed goes to the next as a blossom, and that which came to me as a blossom goes on to fruit. So here we are today, gathered in this meeting place on the first Sunday in May, and our life's journey had brought us to this place in time. Yesterday, as I mentioned earlier, was celebrated as May Day in many parts of the world, where it's a public holiday. Why? In 1899, May Day was chosen as the date for international workers by the Socialists and Communists of the Second International in Chicago. Since that time, it's been a focal point for socialists, communists and anarchists to take part in mass demonstrations. Although it had its political genesis in the USA, today it's an important holiday in countries such as China, North Korea, Cuba and Russia, where the significant bump of revolution in the political history of those countries is celebrated. However, the history of May Day celebrations goes way back beyond the past century. The history of this holiday goes back to Roman times, so over 2,000 years ago, and was a celebration, a festival of flowers, where people made small baskets filled with treats or flowers to give secretly to friends and neighbours. It was customary to leave the basket on the doorstep of a neighbour or friend. This celebration is still practiced in some countries, particularly in Northern Europe, where it is part of the rejoicing, marking the arrival of spring and that summer is almost there. This is particularly important when spring's arrival is seen as a time to mark that the harsh winter has been endured and survived, and that there is the anticipation and hope that easier times lie ahead. Maypole dancing and Morris dances are some of the traditional methods of displaying the body of the celebrations. Unfortunately, the photographs I tried to find for the Morris dances all show the rear ends of the Morris dances and not a frontal shot. But you get the idea. Having endured the challenges that winter has brought, there is a strong desire for celebration. Here in Australia, because, or particularly in South Australia, where our winters are reasonably mild, we don't suffer quite the same way through a protracted, harsh winter. And so perhaps we don't celebrate the arrival of spring as such. We are very fortunate with the climate we live in. But it's an interesting aspect. The photograph that's on the slide there is of a maypole being erected, and as you can see, some of the maypoles are huge and they take several hands to erect them. Each of us in this room this morning is at different stages in our journey of life. We may have endured scarring of some kind, be that physical, mental, emotional, or social, or possibly a combination of two or three of these aspects of the human condition. Although there may be similarities in events that have helped to shape us and bring us to this moment in time, we will have been affected differently and related to those challenges in a variety of ways, dependent on how many other factors acting on and within us occur at the same time. At times, looking towards the future can appear as an overwhelming task. We can doubt that we will be able to cope with challenges that are inherent in moving forward. For example, it is as simple as getting through the next minute sometimes, or hour, or day, let alone the next month, year, or years, a slower process. I'd like to pause now and allow you a few moments to reflect back on your life's journey and how significant events have helped to bring you to this place in time. Another poem by Vanessa Southern, who is also a UUA minister and author, and it might help guide your thoughts. Even this is enough. So much undone, so much to do, so much to heal in us and the world. So much to acquire, a meal, a healthy body, a fit one, a lover, a job, a better job. Proof we have and are enough, just around the corner now. And up against it, the reality of all that falls short and the limits of today, we honour the limits. If your body won't do what it used to, for right now, let it be enough. If your mind won't stop racing, or you can't think of the word, Let it be enough. If you are here utterly alone and in despair, be all that here with us. If today you cannot sing because your throat hurts or you don't have the heart for music, be silent. The world won't stop spinning on her axis if you don't rise to all occasions today. Love won't cease to flow in your direction. Your heart won't stop beating. All hope won't be lost. You are part of the plan for this world's salvation. The world needs its oceans of people striving to be good, to carry us to the shores of hope and wash fear from the beachheads and cleanse all wounds so that they can heal. But oceans are big, and I am sure there are parts that don't fill up to the task of the whole some days. Rest if you must. Then, like the swimmer lying on her back who floats, or the hawk carried on cushions of air, rest in pews made to hold weary lives in space, carved out for the doing of nothing much but being. Perhaps then you will feel in your bones, in your weary heart, the aching, healing sense that this is enough, even this. That we are, you are, enough. Now I'd like to have a minute's silence where you contemplate. So what about our life's journey ahead? In his book, Parting Words, Benjamin Ferenc states, "Lives are pathways that don't run straight." Ferenc is now 101 years old, is a lawyer, and was a chief prosecutor for the United States at the Nuremberg trials of Nazi German criminals. He wrote the book, Parting Words, when he was nearly 100 years old. In it, he offers 9 lessons for a remarkable life. Another piece of advice he offers in this book when questioning how do you deal with a broken heart, he says simply, slowly. Who knows what bumps and bends, what twists and turns, what challenges, either overwhelming or small, we will have to face and deal with as we go along our journey. Will we have the strength and the resilience to cope with these inevitable chapters of our journey? Speaking from personal experience, worry and anxiety have never helped me face my challenges and have been a surefire way of adding to the stress that those challenges have brought. We are told that a key component of dealing with future challenges is resilience. What is our understanding of resilience? Is it a skill or a trait that is something we can learn and develop, or is it something in our genetic structure? Is it always a good thing, or are there negative aspects of it? Psychologists define resilience as the process of adapting well in the face of adversity, trauma, tragedy, threats, or significant sources of stress, such as family and relationship problems, serious health problems or workplace and financial stresses. In short, resilience may be thought of as the ability to bounce back from a traumatic or adverse situation, returning to some form of normal, whatever that might be. When thinking of resilience, I can't help thinking of this in the slow motion image of a rubber ball bouncing. The ball is pulled towards the earth by the force of gravity. As it hits the earth, its shape is distorted. It is no longer spherical, but becomes partly flattened, then due to kinetic energy, and following Newton's law of motion, it rebounds and assumes the shape it had before its collision with the ground. I'm not convinced that humans are able to replicate this. Even with this analogy of the ball, too much of a good thing can cause unexpected problems, and I'll demonstrate. Balls come in all shapes and sizes. Gravity, as you know, is a constant. Does size, shape, make any difference? Well, I think you all know from high school science, no. But let's have a look at the way things work. If I drop the large ball, momentarily flat. Tennis ball, a bit more of a bounce back. What about this little tiny fella? Yes, that's well, but lots of resilience, but too much. And out of control. When is resilience or too much resilience unhealthy? For example, too much resilience could make a person overly tolerant of adversity. At work, this can translate into unnecessarily putting up with boring or demoralising jobs. It might mean tolerating poor behaviour from bosses or colleagues for longer than needed. In other words, allowing yourself to become a doormat for others' bullying, abusive behaviour. Benjamin Ferenc on this topic states, "Don't let anyone bully you twice. Stand up for yourself." He was raised in a very tough part of the United States. He was an immigrant child, didn't have a lot of English, and was bullied often. But he said, "They never bullied me twice, because when they bullied me, I would kick them in the, balls, and as they fell, I'd thump them in the head. Never touch me again." I'm not suggesting that's the way we deal with bullies. <No. What about the question of whether resilience is a trait or learnt? Psychologists who conclude that resilience is a skill that develops in relationship to family dynamics claim that functional family processes allow children to efficiently develop resilience, whereas dysfunctional family processes impede this development. The American Psychological Association agrees with this concept of learnt resilience, claiming to an extent healthy habits, getting enough sleep, eating well and exercising, can reduce stress, which may in turn boost resilience. Similarly, being sure to nurture close relationships can help an individual find support when trouble arises. Regularly thinking about morals and actively living according to one's values have been linked to higher resilience. So nurturing close relationships is important, and living in accordance to one's values are two key points here, and highlights the role our Unitarian community can assist our fellow members with. The American Psychology Association also concludes from recent scientific studies that resilience is the complex product of genetic, psychological, biological, social, and spiritual factors. Supporting each other on their spiritual journey is a vital part of this process. If we take the position that the amount of resilience an individual has is determined by genetic factors, as well as being a developmental skill, how does this relate to us dealing with the bumps in our life's journey that we invariably face or have to face? Is one of the factors, key factors in this, positivity? You know the well-worn concept of whether you are a glass half-filled or half-empty person. That is, are you more inclined to be positive or negative? And that causes some concern for me, that concept. There are times and situations where I seem to be able to cope in a positive manner, and other times when I feel I cope quite negatively. If we go back to the glass half-filled or half-empty, I'd have to say, for me, it depends on the contents of the glass. If it contained water, I'd quite happily see it as half full. If the glass contained red wine, then I most probably think it was half empty. This would be due to my love of red wine and wanting the enjoyment of the drinking of the glass to last as long as possible. Once again, my point being that the situation would play a large part on the level of my positivity. Is it possible to remain positive all the time? Well, scientific research tends to provide a negative response to this question. Scientists provide a reason for us not being able to maintain the positive outlook. They state, and I quote, "Our brains are hardwired to remember the negative. It's a safety mechanism. Our amygdala, tiny almond-shaped structures within our brain, play a key role in the way we respond emotionally to fearful events, both to traumatic events we may have experienced at some point in time and to other events we are taught to be fearful about. These memories are easily triggered, especially when we are tired and fatigued, and a strong emotional response results. If you think of these memories as a painting, the colours of these memories remain deep and vivid over time due to the influence of the amygdala. So if our resilience is a variable, how are we able to tell when our resilience is at a low ebb? The Mayo Clinic offers this advice. If you lack resilience, you might dwell on problems, feel victimised, become overwhelmed or turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms such as substance abuse. If we find ourselves in this situation, what can we do? If we are able to learn from this situation, that's great. But if we can't, Benjamin Ferenc offers this advice. Some lessons are harder to grasp than others. Learn not to beat yourself up about that. A Australian psychologists outline conditions that aid the learning of resilience. They claim resilience is made up of five pillars: self-awareness, mindfulness, self-care, positive relationships, and purpose. By strengthening these pillars, we in turn become more resilient. I'd like to go back to an earlier quote in this address that resilience is the complex product of genetic, psychological, biological, social, and spiritual factors. I suggest there isn't much we can do about our genetics or our biological state, but I believe that we can nurture the resilience base that we have by working on two factors, that this fits well with our Unitarianism. As mentioned by the APA, they are the social and spiritual aspects of resilience. As a community, we are tasked with assisting each other in these areas through love and support. If we are successful in these areas, offering comfort and hope to each other, then when we are challenged by the bumpy parts of our life's journey, our resilience will be better equipped to better cope with whatever we are dealing with. Then, just as people celebrate the coming of better days, as in May Day celebrations, we need to celebrate the fact that we've made it through the rain and the storms of life, and do this as a community of others that have made it through as well.
The text I'm about to read is called Fear by Khalil Gibran. It is said that before entering the sea, a river trembles with fear. She looks back at the path she has travelled, from the peaks of the mountains, the long winding road crossing forests and villages, and in front of her she sees an ocean so vast that to enter there seems nothing more than to disappear forever. But there is no other way. The river cannot go back. Nobody can go back. To go back is impossible in existence. The river needs to take a risk of entering the ocean, because only then will the fear disappear, because that's where the river will know it's not about disappearing into the ocean, but of becoming the ocean.
If you'd like to stand as you are able, we'll have the benediction. When we leave this place of community, love and acceptance, may we be able to face the challenges that will come our way in the sure knowledge that we do not have to face them alone, and that we are part of a far greater existence. So be it.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.